Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM Sports account to get started. Then visit your promotion section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Welcome you to Porch Talk. I'm whoever in the hell I am, and this is my song called Lay Down with the Devil. Some days are almost heaven. Some days are hot like hell. Sometimes I'm on the level. Some days I lay down with the devil. There's always plenty of shade in the shadow of a stranger. You can rest there for a while and pretend you're not in danger. And sometimes it rains in hell. That's when the devil turns his face to God. Then he knows the old man's watching, 'cause he sent something down just to cool them sinners off. Some days are almost heaven. Yeah, some days are hot like hell. Yeah, sometimes I'm on the level. And some days I lay down with the devil. And heaven's lake is far, somewhere way up there on high. And the caves in hell are dark, and the rivers all run dry. In hell there are no stars, and everybody's stoned. Immaculate and smoky bars with painted faces sitting around wondering where in the hell they are. Yes, some days are almost heaven. Some days are hot like hell. Sometimes I'm on the level. And some days I lay down with the devil. Some days I lay down with the devil. And some days I lay down with the devil someday. I say I lay down with the devil. Welcome ye. It'd be a jinx if we do it off air.
That would be.
Wouldn't it?
It would. We unplugged the fridge.
Well, we unplugged the fridge
on the very first part of the very first episode of my very first interview on air. Let me do it.
Yeah. All right. Oh, man, it's been a while, dude.
We got one more thing. Remember, we shut the door.
Mm-hmm.
You said shut that door. I can't. No, can't come in. Lola, the Spola, the poodle, ain't coming in. Fridge, we'll cut the fridge up. Sorry, guys.
Can you get to it?
Gotta get this in rewrote. Ooh, it's so quiet now. Now we're gonna have to fill this air.
Yeah, you got pin drops. Well,
there's no cover noise.
Whoever the hell you are, we got Daniel Sharp back with us. You may remember him from, what, 2-3 years ago now? First time?
It was a long time ago for me in another life. Those interviews were. So much so that y'all might as well consider this a complete new person as far as the interview goes. Like, yes, there's a historical connectivity to those other interviews of that gentleman that was speaking, and that was, in fact, me. But lots happened since then. You know, as that does to all of us, it's called life and experience. So it does make sense that you got yourself a whole new person here that was probably there to begin with. He just, he wasn't ready to talk back then.
Right on, man. My life has changed a lot since then, too.
How so?
Where I live, I still do the same thing, occupation, but I took the gas off music. I put more gas on this. And also, I mean, in the context of the name of this episode and the song that you played, I'm trying not to lay down with devils.
Right on. I guess right on. What are you try not to lay down devils? I know exactly what that means. Do you want to talk about maybe what one of them devils' subject matter is? Some devil you don't try to lay down with metaphorically? I mean,
it's not metaphorical at all.
Okay.
Literal, in a literal sense. Like, that was a tough thing to learn, especially coming out of a divorce. Was it so easy to do? To rebound?
Oh, hell.
And the more I did it, the worse I felt. And it didn't add anything to the things in my life that I hold dear now, such as my creative process or the dopamine or whatever those pleasure factors are, like in the grand scheme of things, are just moments of a bigger. So it was better for me to be try to be as pure as possible in that sense, if that makes sense.
It does make sense. And you said a word there in the beginning of that whole thing that it's quite taboo, I've come to understand in these years, to say that word and have conversations about it. But yet, here we are having one.
Yeah.
You said it. You brought it right on out. But I've noticed that's a taboo, can be a taboo subject, and a lot of people get uncomfortable hearing about it.
Well, I think a lot of people need to be open and talk about it because it's real and it's life and it happens.
I've come to understand this twice in my life.
Yeah. But you had a piece of paper for me.
I did. We were going to start this out. It's the best question I could come up with.
But, like, let's chase this rabbit for
Let's chase this rabbit, and then we got that good question. It'll still be relative in a little bit, that question I wrote down for us to answer. But where we're at right now is, we're talking about, how would you just, that, well, I'm not going to say that one word because I want to come up with a different word to describe it that'd be more interesting and informative. It's a crucible. It can be a crucible.
Okay.
That thing that we said. A challenge, an experience, a opportunity. There's a lot of words that would be synonym for the word divorce. Boom. I hope we didn't just lose y'all. I'm not going to spend much time on this, but we are talking about it right now. So Yeah, you just said you had one and it affected you. It was an experience that molded the new way that you went into your life, I believe, is I'm giving a big old softball throw at it.
I mean, yeah. And I mean, I'll throw a softball back at it. I mean, just to be vague and open about it. Because, I mean, we don't have to spend the whole time talking about it. But I've walked a little bit with you since yours. It completely turned my life upside down.
Uh-huh.
Because I wasn't the one that wanted it. Uh-huh. But in the same things, I felt like my hands were tied.
And I believe in, I don't know this, but maybe in most divorces, there are two people, and one of them occupies that position, and the other one occupies the other position. And it can be either one or the other. And in maybe some rare cases, or in some cases, it's like both people are like, yeah. Oh, yeah. You know,
and like what I was pursuing then and what I'm pursuing now, it was one of the best things that could have happened. I just didn't see it at the time. But now that I have focus and I have a vision for what I'm trying to accomplish with my life, that had to happen. Everything had to be that way.
And did you have a moment when you wondered, maybe in the harder parts, the beginning of the challenge that you underwent that was delivered to you without your desire for that challenge at the time? Did you have a moment at the beginning when you wondered what it was that you even wanted to do with your life and if it even meant a damn thing for you to want to do anything with it and what accomplishment was and what the whole motherfucking meaning
of life?
Well,
I think the way I behaved immediately after showed that I didn't, because I was seeking immediate pleasures in whatever way I could get it.
And you were doing that as a refuge from the other thing you were experiencing. Is that correct?
Yeah. I didn't want to look inside myself and deal with everything. I wanted to just push it to the back of my mind and then satiate my mind to where it didn't have time, or it was so dull that it couldn't even go there. So I didn't have to deal with that, so to call it, the demon or the devil of it, the anxiety.
Did you eventually have to face that devil anyway?
Yeah.
You did. I know you did.
Ran for a long time from it.
Yeah. You're not going to face that devil. You can just prolong it.
Yep.
That's my strong opinion.
That's exactly what, I mean, lesson learned now. You know, I've dealt with it. And because, like, all that time I spent, and I was doing good things at that time, and I was doing the things that I wanted, but it was like there was a veil over my eyes to where I couldn't see that far ahead. But now that I've dealt with it and my vision is cleared and, like, that side of me is pure, I can see clearly what my goals are, and I'm knocking them off one at a time.
I like that. I like all that optimism and joy. Oh, I heard maybe joy, but I like all that optimism. I'm assuming there's some cross-section of joy that comes with accomplishment.
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, I know there is. I already know there is. But for you, that's the same.
And, yeah, I mean, the goals are selfish, but ultimately what I was into before the crucible, I was into missions, and I was into I was heavy into church, and I love being a part of the faith, and I love working in that field. But the thing that I found about it the most was community and working within the culture. And after that happened, a lot of doors were shut, and a few people tried to revitalize my faith. Ministry.
And faith.
In faith, but I quickly found that they were not capable of doing it.
Right.
And even though they were coming from a great place, it was something that I was going to have to walk through, and I was going to have to come out.
That is what I find is true for me about God.
Yeah.
Very few human beings can affect change for me in this way. Like God. And now we're talking about You can, I'm saying that word, or you can attach anything you want to it, but the unseen. You may want to submit that for self and put it any way you want. Very few people can inspire me to change as much as I can inspire myself to through my own devices and meditations with my own God. For any of you that have your own views, that's how I'm seeing it, with my own understandings of the infinite, the non-infinite, the existing and the not existing, and my interpretation of that will always make me do things before someone else says do this thing.
Yeah,
you know. So,
but after I finally dealt with everything and went through, I found God again, or I would, better yet, he found me. That's a weird concept to talk about too, is like just the way that we talk about that moment says a lot about if it's selfish or not. I think, and sometimes maybe we're just not being careful in the way that we state it, but when I say that I find something, like I think, well, I did it on my own, when in fact I'm not capable of doing anything on my own. It takes friends, it takes things falling into the right place, it takes things moving and shaking, and you know, just opportunities to arise.
Let me tell you what I've learned so much in these last years doing my solo operation. I did once believe that I was capable of doing everything on my own, and I mean, I knew I couldn't do like a five-piece band on my own. I knew the infrastructure was required and people were required for things. But what I meant was, internally speaking, I thought I was a Gibraltar of a human that could exist alone with no human contact and keep my strength and my sanity.
No.
I believed it. I believed I was the one person that was so secure in myself and loved my company so much that I would never be affected by loneliness. Oh, well, let me tell you what. That is not true. That was not true. I found out that me and most likely people in general need a certain amount of human contact, relationships, you know, conversations and things like coffee. But the most important thing is I found out that it's important to have a few people that you're friends and family with out there in the world that care if you exist. And care about your well-being. And you know that they care about it, and maybe you contact each other about it, because if you're untethered from that, you become untethered from your motherfucking humanity.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure, man. We were, I was hanging out with a friend of mine that I hadn't seen in a while, similar to this. And we were talking about, like, the value of, like, friendship and, like, how much that really meant. And even, like, let's say that, man, you were to pass, or you were to just, one day you didn't tell nobody, you just left, and you left here for good. Well, those people that you had a positive, or sometimes even negative, effect on someone's life, your story lives on, and it's passed down to their kids, and, like, your story and, like, your perhaps legacy is told by those that you had an impact on. Yeah. And a lot of times these people are comedians, and they're musicians, they're songwriters, they write books, they give great speeches, or maybe they were just really good about being there.
Yeah, totally. I feel real good about a lot of the work I did with the Guild. You know, we still do work, but at one time we had a lot going on, the Philadelphia and Neshoba County Musicians Guild, which I'm currently the president of. Former presidents were like Philip Saville, and we're a very small sort of organic group that we don't do a whole heck of a lot anymore, but we have minutes and we meet, and we have a nonprofit ID number and all these things. But we used to do benefit concerts to restore the Ellis and stuff before it was the Country Music, you know, Congress and stuff, which is awesome, by the way. But and we did a lot of stuff. But one of the things we did was give lessons to you know, younger musicians in the community and at the VFW, their mom and daddy would bring them out after school, and we'd all be in one big room, either doing guitar or songwriting, or I'd talk about the industry and how to copyright your songs and why publishing, all of these things. And a lot of the thing about that is, and we, before that, we just put on shows and didn't do any of that. And all these kids would come through and play. And we do the first Friday of the fair booking at the pavilion, which is really cool. And a lot of those kids got their first ever times to play through the guild. And it was so cool because we would always pay them, because that was part of the lesson, as far as I was concerned, that the child, teenager, whatever, would come up, do a show, do some songs, and then get $50. And they'd go, okay, this is valuable in a way that it was a no word lesson I gave them right away, that it's okay to get $50 for your work, and this is valid. This is an industry you can work in. This wasn't just something you did on the side. And if they want to decide to move forward, they had a lesson right away that was good. And they could decide not get the $50 later, but they know that it's possible. And I didn't reinforce the wrong lesson for who wants to be a professional musician, that they were taking a different path than being a professional by doing a different style of performance that was not paid for their life, you know, which is fine as well, but there are two ways to do it, you know, several ways actually. But anyway, the point, I'm gonna wrap this up. You said to begin with this point, a lot of those young people are now older people and have continued with music, and they record and they play, and some of them get paid and some of them don't, depending on where they want to play and how they want to do it. Different choice. I mean, I play places I get paid and places I don't too. You know, there's just where you want to go. But I believe I'm happy that I sat in that room, that I helped many people with create the guild, and we all sat in that room and we provided those places. And the town, by the way, the different organizations also joined right in with us and made sure those kids got paid. And like, we would have Ham Jam, and those guys and ladies that were in charge of that would call us up and let our young bands play, and it'd be a nice little round that everybody was doing everything for the community. It was so sweet, and still is. I mean, we're still active and we still have a little something, and that's how it can be later. But there was no resistance. It shouldn't have been at all. The town really took in these young people and all of it. Feel good about that. If I was gone tomorrow, some of those kids who are now still working in things would remember me, you know.
Yeah.
I think.
Man, and that's kind of like where I landed, like with, man, I love doing this show. I've got more listeners than I thought I would ever have, and like, I've made like lifelong friends from doing this. I've had a lot of opportunities open up, and we've been able to do a lot of cool things along the way. And but throwing those music festivals, I recently, and this is to your point, just a touch, is I had a singer-songwriter night, and the Columbus Arts Council, they let us use the Onova Theater. It's a nice little listening room, great stage. And I had a friend of mine who is just trying to cut his teeth from Mobile, who's been writing great songs and has never played out of Mobile, and I was like, come play here. And Drew Young, he's polished. He's been around. He's been doing the thing for a while, but he's like a senior songwriter.
You played me Drew Young in private before when we have been, haven't you?
I think. Maybe.
Do you have something on your phone? And it was personal on your phone. We played it in my car one time coming home from the fairground. I'm pretty sure.
That was Abe Partridge.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Sorry, Abe. Sorry, Drew.
It's all good.
Abe Partridge, that shit was tight, though. Now go back to Drew.
But he's a great songwriter. And it kind of like, kind of Tom Petty-esque. And also like a little touch of Paul Thorne towards, you know, it's got some pretty fun, kind of perverted stuff in there sometimes. no knock it.
Oh, hey.
You know.
It's art. Hey, it's art. You can do what you want.
Yeah.
It's you're all that stuff. It's got a little, people say this is off color. This is a dirty word. There's an audience out there that's going to be entertained. I don't know how big or how small, but the thing, whatever your thing is, there's an audience for it that's going to love it. It may it may be 10 people, it may be 10 million people, but the point is, you can't throw away a piece of art and say this one isn't any good. No, there are people that are going to like things that are artistic, that get it and are not offended by it. Not saying it, I had this conversation with my dear friend, this producer I'm working with, about the target. Like, what it comes down to, the target. Where are you aiming? What loop are you trying to bring this to? How many people? Which more people? Less people? Are you specialized? Or, in my case, I'd say, are you just not give a something about all that, and you're just trying to create the art you create and let it find its natural place wherever that the hell is.
Yeah.
Without it, I don't want to think about the damn target, because I don't want the damn target to exist. You know, for me, I'm not shooting at a fucking target.
Yeah.
When I make my art.
Yeah, I understand.
I can't emphasize this enough. You know.
Yeah.
Maybe I was, but I shot at a target once. I remember I wrote a song called Red Light. The target was the ASCAP songwriter competition. I decided to enter it. It was at the casino. It was local. It was fun. And I got to meet Mac McAnally at it, and I'm so glad I did it. And I made a radio song. I said, I'm going to write myself a radio song, because that's what this ASCAP thing's about. I mean, they're looking for songs to, you know, that's what the deal is. A bigger target. And I saw their target, and I went and checked it out, and I was like, I understand the target. Mm-hmm. It requires a hook at this point. The song needs to be this long and short. It needs a bridge. All these things are in the target.
Man, I'll tell you
so
what.
I shot the target with my song Red Light. And now, I think I told the whole story of this ASCAP thing on our other one, so I'm not going to revisit it. But so the Red Light song didn't win, but that was a target. Hey, I love the song. It's still to this day the most requested All Around Hound song in history. And Jimbo, actually,
I was about to request it right now.
Hey, let's do it. I got the guitar. Jimbo loves it too. He recorded it in Como with me and stuff, and did it on his own. And he actually did some rewrites on it, which are cool as hell. But anyway, here's the song Red Light, since I got the guitar. And while we're talking about the target, so here's the one I can remember that I wrote as a target. There may be a couple more hanging around somewhere in my thing, but what's the thing? It's the file cabinet. How about I do a different version of it? Because there's a bazillion of these of me doing it straight up. Can I change it a little some way and make it more fun for me?
Yeah, dude.
Right now? Okay. Hey, you're at home. Are we rolling? Can I just play?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Tuning up, guys. I'm a little sharp on the G. I've got a show this weekend we're going to talk about in a minute. This guitar was in my car all night. Sorry, but all you musicians that are listening are going to be so thank. I'm glad he's tuning. And you'll all be happy. Here we go. Right at the red light, baby. No, it don't matter if you don't think twice. 'Cause I've got two loving arms and I can save you. If you make it to me in the middle of the night. So, snap your fingers, tap your toes, and keep your eyes peeled, baby, for them hoes in the road. And turn it up, sweet rock and roll. Put that right foot down and let the clutch go. Oh. Take a right at the red light, baby, and you know it don't matter if you don't think twice. I got two loved arms, I can save you if it makes me in the middle of the night. Snap your fingers and tap your toes and keep your eyes peeled, baby, for them hoes in the road. Turn it up, sweet rock and roll. Put the right foot down and let the clutch go. You can take a ride at the red light, baby. And you know it don't matter if you don't think twice. And I don't claim to be better. but I can wipe the mud from your hard-pressed feet. You might be thinking that you'd never, but if you're fresh from this fight, well, that's all right with me. You can take a ride at the red light, baby. And you know it don't matter if you don't think twice. 'Cause sometimes them lights, they might blind you. When you're holding on tight with it spinning in your hand, and if you don't look, move fast, they might find you. Don't miss your chance, you better run while you can. And you can take a ride at the red light, baby. And you know it don't matter if you don't think twice. Take a ride at the red light, baby. And you know it don't matter if you don't think twice. I got two loving arms, I can save you. If you make it to me in the middle of the night, you can take a ride. Yeah, sometimes me and David would do this and just hang off on the E and the A for quite a while and do some jam and give the crowd a little chance for a slow dance on red light. And I might make things up or I might not, saying then, you know, woke up this morning, I walked over the mountain, sun was shining on my shoulders. I saw the trail lead down towards town and I took it. Footprints were already there and I stepped across each one by one. And I broke out of the tree line and saw a two-lane road and crossed it. I walked down Main Street and saw a little church down there at the end. I walked on into it. Yeah, I did, y'all. Saw a couple standing there. God, they sure were in love. They was in love. There was a preacher there too. They both said I do. They was in love. They turned back and walked down the aisle, out that front door, and climbed into a 1978 white Cadillac, headliner sagging, and they drove off right back down Main Street the way I'd walked up there. Hell, I saw them go. It was beautiful. I ain't never gonna forget it. You can take a ride at the red light, baby. You know it don't matter if you don't think twice.
Yeah, man. That's a deep cut.
That's a true damn story.
Yeah. Whew. Well, I'll finish. So I had these cats. Drew is out of Hattiesburg. And he plays, you know, Kerry Hudson.
I do. I had the great pleasure. I'll tell you the first time I met Kerry Hudson. Good story for me. Kerry don't remember none of this shit. I promise you. Promise you that now. He might. I don't know. The very first ever Blind Jim's Radio Hour show. Technically, it's the second one. They tried the first ever one. There is a bluegrass band called Confederate Grass from around Oxford. And we had that show. I was there. On the square in Blind Jim's, y'all know where that used to be, and we recorded it, and it was going to be this radio show that went out on the air, right? And the university came up, their radio department, you know, their that tech part, to record it and send it out on the radio, the college radio there, Ole Miss Radio, that we all listened to. Well, there was some technical things that happened, and it didn't get broadcast due to gear issues, and it was the first time that anybody had ever done this, and it just didn't go out, but I heard it. I was there, and that's me. And it was great, but then the next one, we got it right, okay? The next one went out on the air, and this is the one I'm talking about. And I was on it, the first ever Blind Jim's Radio Hour, which later, you know, worked its way into the big radio show that we hear now that's just so awesome, Thacker Mountain. it was the inception of it. And all the people, you know, that did Thacker were there, and it was their concept and their thing that they did. But that's the location it started in. And I was on the first one. I was warming up in Southside Art Gallery on my song, also known as Jerry Jeff Walker's song, City of New Orleans. And Kerry Hudson walks in, who I didn't know at the time at all. I only moved to town 2 weeks before, and I just now started discovering the great Mississippi.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Synovus.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Find all your 4th of July needs at low prices, all in the Kroger app. Get USDA Choice bone-in tender ribeye steaks for $7.99 a pound with a digital coupon. Limit 5, then buy 2, get 3 free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Music that I would come to say, oh wow,
Blue Mountain,
and yeah, and I just, you know, hit town, and I knew.
No, I recently had him on the cast.
I bet he was a heck of a guest, huh? He walked into Southside where I'm at doing my song, Jerry Jeff song. Man, that's cool. I love that. He says, "You gonna be on? Yep. Can I play on that with you?"
Oh my God,
he's
dude.
Got his. I said, "Yeah. Well, let me jump on it real quick with you." He and I warmed up on it a little bit, and I was like, "Wow, this cat's good." Oh, hell yeah. Well, yeah, hell yeah, he's good. It was Kerry Hudson, right?
Dude.
Oh, Ed Dye was there. The amazing Ed Dye. He jumped on it. George Sheldon, bassist, George. Ooh. Am I saying the right? You don't know hell. Okay.
Did he go on to play with Watchbread?
No, that's the other George.
Oh.
Yeah, George McConnell. No, who was not? Was he at the show? He might have been a guest, but he wasn't nowhere on the show that night. George wasn't. George Sheldon, yeah. Piano player, bass player.
Yeah.
Anyway, and a lot of us, and the point being, we played, and now nobody recorded that or anything, except I have it on a cassette tape, because before, my house was 3-4 blocks from the square, and I could play the radio with a cassette in it, hit play and record, and get whatever come off the radio, and that was on the radio. So I record when I got home from the show that night. My tape was over with, but I had the whole damn show, and I did that for a few of those early ones. You call that pirating? I don't know what you call it. I call it. I got them tapes in a box somewhere. I had to dig out, but I'm so happy to have it. And you said, "Do you know?" And Kerry, well, he will not remember any of this. And other than that, a few times I would see the band and stuff, and everybody knows everybody, but nobody really knows anybody. So, yeah, he don't know who the hell I am in that sense, but that happened.
Yeah, dude. First time I met Kerry and saw him play, my buddy Tyler Tisdale. This is the inaugural event at the Mockingbird down there. It's a brand new venue. And Tyler Tisdale, Drew Young, and Kerry Hudson were sharing the stage that night, three songwriters. One song a piece, just rotate. And man, like, you could hear when it was Kerry's turn. I was unfamiliar with who he was. I didn't know who he was.
Well,
like Tyler told me, like, a little bit. He was like, "Look up Blue Mountain," and like
he's one of those flying to the. He's not. He's totally above the radar. Don't get me wrong, but I've always known he's like that ringer. That you kind of, you know who he is. And if you want to know who he is, you can figure out quick. But he seems to me like one of those ringers. Like that slides in and is just, usually better than everybody else, but you don't know why. And you go, where's his record, his Carrie Hudson record? You know, I know they're out there. He has tons of that. And it takes you about a minute to go listen to him. But he's a musician's musician is what I'm trying to say. And I like that.
Yeah.
Cause and he doesn't every feel time, like he's secure enough. He doesn't have to blow his own horn sort of guy. You just watch him quietly and see that he's awesome.
That's what I was going to say, dude. Every time it was his turn, you could hear a pin drop.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I mean, like, and there were a lot of musicians in the audience that night. And, like, you could see each other, like, just tapping each other, you know, while he was playing. Be like,
right.
Yep. Yep. That's it.
He's
unreal, man.
He seems to get better and better. That's another thing you can tell about, I think you can tell about great artists in general, is they get better and better over their lives and careers, and they refine like a fine wine or something.
Oh, you know? Dude.
And it just, right to the very end, as long as they're productive, it just keeps evolving. And sometimes in ways that you don't understand, and you're not sure if that's right or not, but it don't matter, because it becomes, you come to see the genius. I'll see a great artist totally change all their methods, and you go, what the F, what the heck? But then, you know, it yields something later that's different and better. Yeah. Better is a relative word, but.
Yeah. Sounds like you're almost kind of like describing like what I've heard a lot of people call it a David Bowie period of their art, to where like they're off in the weeds, maybe so to speak, or they're just exploring some new genre or some kind of a, and then like when they get done with that and they get back to, they bring what they learned from that to what they were doing, and then it becomes this brand new thing, and it's just like, whoa, man. It's almost like Robert Johnson, you know, he got laughed out of town, and he come back, and everybody's like, he sold his soul to the devil. You know what I mean?
Did he?
I don't think so.
Did he do it metaphorically?
I think he went off and practiced.
Did he metaphorically sell his soul to the devil, and not in real life, though? Did he sell out to music completely?
I would say metaphorically in that way, yes.
Because that is what is that is the thing that is required to do the art at its top level, right there. That one right there, I said. I believe for an average person, maybe like a savant can do the most excellent music with his left hand while he's programming computers with his right. But you know, I know that person's out there. But yeah, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the rest of us.
Yeah. Hell yeah, dude.
The Robert Johnsons of the world, the Bob Dylans. You know, if Bob Dylan didn't metaphorically sell his soul to the devil, and I'm not talking about religiously, I'm talking about commit himself completely to his art form, would he have been able to go and bring that one beat acoustic guitar to New York and win? No.
Yeah. But we've been getting all the way around it, and that's fine. We've been building stories within the story. But and then I had new friends of mine outside of Nashville in a town called Dixon, Tennessee. Barney Wells and Zach Brooks. Both of those guys, look them up. They are well worth your Spotify playlist. But
say it again.
Barney Wells. He's got music about to come out. And then Brand and Brooks.
Brand and Brooks.
Mm-hmm. That's Zach Brooks' band. Dude, it's great. I should have brought the record but you know, like setting this up, dude, I'll tell you a little bit of the backstory on us sitting down today. I work a half day at work, and right when I leave work, I text Daniel and I was like, what you got on tap for today? Well, I'm about to head down your way, and we're about to get this podcast in, because we have been talking about doing this for too long, and we gotta get it out. And you enjoying it?
I got the text about, okay, let's see. Here's what my life is now. Okay, this is why we're doing this. How are we doing it? This morning I woke up late for me, which was like 9-ish. Okay, that's real late, quite honestly, to get a day going, in all honesty. But my nights tend to run late, where I'm also doing work that is what I call music work, you know, writing. I might be out in the world somewhere at a venue. You might want to call that scouting. I don't know, but it's a place I might play or want to play, or I might be out listening to another musician or just sitting at a musician's house writing songs or seeing where they're playing and tell them where I'm playing.
So the past couple of songs.
It's a musician's life. You know, it's also sounds like a lot of fun. It is, but it's also can be work. Like last night, I would have loved to have washed my dishes and maybe watched some Netflix and went on my couch with sleep, but I decided to go to a couple of these venues that I'm scouting and see if I want to play there and see what it was like. And I did. So I got home a little late and I slept a little late, but I got the text and, he said, "What you doing right now?" I said, "I'm making coffee." "All right, you want to do a podcast? I'll be there in 2 hours." And I thought, dang. In my mind, it was going to be like an evening. We'd have a fire going, have some barbecue already cooked, like have a couple of beers, like, and we'd kind of get into this. But then, you know, the work ethic part of myself and the artist part of myself said, "Well, Alan's got this time right now. And this works for me, so let's just do it." And then I thought he'd be here in like a long time, coming from his place up in far north of where he's at now. And he showed up early, way early, and I didn't know it was him. It was a weird truck and a weird person. And I live in the middle of nowhere, so I had to go, me and the dogs had to check him out. And then we got rolling on this sucker after about 15 or 30 minutes of getting caught up and throwing some gear up, and we started talking, and this sounds like rambling, but I'm just assuming all y'all that's listening to these things like to hear all this talking, or you wouldn't have pushed the button. And I might even try to say something more entertaining and important, or less important and less entertaining in a moment.
But
back to you, Alan.
And I had those guys. They came down, and that right there was important to me. We had a cat from Mobile. We had some cats relative of Nashville, and we had someone from Hattiesburg. And the opening act that I booked, to go back to your point about the guild.
Right, right.
I booked a young lady, a senior in high school, who is, you know, it seemed like to me when I was that age, there were a lot of gatekeepers. And, you know, it was almost you had to work into being able to play the scene, but how are you going to get the work in and be able to play if won't nobody let you in to play, right? And so I had Shelby Sullivan come and open it, and I mean, I'm excited for her. I mean, that's not the only opportunity she's had. She has a lot of great opportunities coming, and I mean, I think that's someone's future that people should pay attention to. She's got a great voice, and I think she's going to be great. And that was important to me because she got to shadow people from all walks of life, you know. A guy just getting started, a seasoned songwriter, and then like a technical full band duo of singer-songwriters who were beginning to find success. You got to see like all sides of it, you know, at a very young age. And you got to ask them whatever question you wanted to ask, and, you know, you got to kind of see what it's like to be in their shoes and share the stage with them. I thought that was a beautiful thing, man.
Absolutely. And I remember all those times when I was younger and I went and got to do things with people with more experience and just watching them work, watching how calm and collected they were.
Yeah.
And I know now that's because, you know, it's through repetition. That's anything that you do a long time, you become comfortable with it and you know what you're going to do and you're confident and secure. Whether it's working on engines or doing with these. So as a young person, you watch that and start, I believe, trying to emulate it, and you start to understand how it can be.
Yeah, man. And we did a podcast after that. It's out now, and it's just a bunch of songwriters talking about the craft. And, man, like, I mean, this is kind of what the show is about, but there are times when I don't like talking about the craft. Like, it's almost like I listen to a lot of comedian podcasts, and whenever they begin to get into the weeds and talking about the craft of comedy, like, they stop themselves.
Yeah, pulling the curtain back sometimes is what it is. sometimes I don't want the curtain pulled back. Sometimes I just want to enjoy the art, like the artist intended it, from a void.
Well, man, just like mutual friends of ours, whenever, you know, I'm out, hey, man, you seen Daniel lately? Have you talked to him? You know, just to ask about you. And what's weird is, like, well, I could just go straight to the source. I could give him a shout. But, you know, sometimes I like to see what other people are saying. And he's like, well, he's poetic as ever.
That's a good thing. The one thing they say about me is that he's still a poet.
Well, that's the one thing the way that, yeah. You know, people, you know, that I, mutual friends of ours, like, that was one of the first things that I've recognized is, like, the way that you express an idea, man. It's like living poetry or something. Like, you've a way with words. You know what I mean? And you can, and you're really good about wording things, but if you don't know exactly what's going on, you have no idea. So it totally applies to something else.
Yeah, you can. It's accessible.
Yeah,
in some way, I guess. Like, it's like sometimes. Yeah, sometimes I'd like to say this. I don't know if it's true. Maybe my songs are choose your own fate adventure book. Like from when you were in junior high and you got to go. If you want to go down this path, turn to page 17. If you want to go to the castle, turn to page 57. So sometimes I'm write my songs like that, and I'll let your mind take either path it wants, because it's going to end up maybe at the same place and maybe not, but each listener might have a different journey. And maybe as you listen to it over time, you can choose different paths to get down different lanes on the same song. So it's not just the poetry and the wording allows it to be more than one thing over time. Maybe it can be many things to many people. And maybe it'll even be things that it never was to me. Mm-hmm. But then what that is I can listen to my own work and hear my songs become things to me that they weren't before, because subconsciously I created it that way. So I also get to be a listener of myself.
Yeah.
That's very selfish. I've been accused of being a selfish artist. That's the most selfish thing I think a songwriter might have ever said is, oh yeah, I totally just write this shit so later I'll really enjoy it. I even do it so well that I trick myself into not knowing I'm doing it.
I don't think so, man. Like, I think that's kind of like a trap question. Like, I've heard of, it's a Newsky, Brett Newsky, he hosts a podcast. It's called A Dirt from the Road. He's a, you know, he's a international touring band. And a fan recently had asked him, you know, like, do you listen to your own songs? And he was like, as an artist, like, I feel like that's kind of a gotcha question, because you don't want to come off some kind of a, you know, selfish way, or maybe like kind of narcissistic, or however you want to paint it. But if you're not enjoying the art that you're making, and if you don't listen to it, what is the point? Like, you know?
I completely agree. But also I will say that I enjoy my work listening to it a long time after I've created it and it's been out, rather than immediately. There's different ways to listen to it. And right away, I listen to it critically and technically a lot. And then after that, I'll and even enjoy it too. But then I may listen to it to enjoy the other parts on it that are not me, you know, because there's that, oh, wow, this instrumental is so good. But then I'll try to not listen to it, not try, but I won't listen to it, because I'm creating other art at the time. And then in the instance of, say, 13 Outside the Wire with me and David, I listened to it differently. That's 20, 15, 16 years ago we did this. And it's you know, been out for a couple of years now, sort of out goes. You can listen to it, Spotify. And when I listen to, like, I've started putting some of our songs in a few of my playlists for me that I'm going to listen to. Especially when they fit with the genre of the playlist I've made. Like a song for the apocalypse, for instance, is on 13 Outside the Wire. You know, the clutter it was building, just like a wall. The shadows creeping on down the hall. The song was a timeless classic, and it was one that we all knew as they cut us up subtly into groups of one and two. The odds were mounting quicker than I could count, and I was busy pacing, looking for my way out. I just need a crack in the wall to peer through. I just need a glimpse to keep me going and get my hands out of these fists.
You might as well.
Clutter it was building. It's like a wall. Shadows was creeping on down the hall. And the song was a timeless classic. Yeah, one that we all knew as they cut us up subtly. Into groups one and two. And the odds was mounting. Yeah, quicker than I could count. And I was busy pacing. Yeah, looking for my way out. I just need a crack in the wall to peer through. Just need a glimpse, yeah, to keep me going and get my hands out of these fists. Because a body on fire, we just won't tire. If it ain't ready for the funeral pyre, burn me if you can, boys. If you can catch me, if you can take me, it ain't gonna be easy. And the pickers all tell me, son, you got what it takes. And I go back to Mississippi and continue plowing up the brakes. And I can grow corn in my victory garden, high enough to hide my defeats at the hands of the miseries whose company I keep. And fast cars and whiskey, they try to run me off the edge, but the pine trees stop me. Yeah, for the price of a length of my leg. And a body on fire just won't tire. If it ain't ready for the funeral pyre, burn me if you can, boys. If you can catch me, if you can take me, it ain't gonna be easy, no. 'Cause my motor's riding, I can run all night. Yeah, my foot's steady and my gun hand's ready. I'm a hurricane. Oh yeah, it's like the name stamped on the belt on the back of her jeans. And the wallet in my pocket that holds my dreams. Take it easy, y'all. And I see you on down the line, they're picking in the shelters. Clad head to toe in Lincoln green, out there picking in the shelters and hiding from the screams. The army's gone and the tribe's alone. They chase us with gasoline. Burn me if you can, boys. You can catch me. You can take me. It ain't gonna be easy, no. Song for the Apocalypse. I got that on one of my playlists.
Thanks for sharing, man.
It's a different, that whole, well, you know, I did one of the original words in there that has never been ever done in any version of it. The one that says, clad head to toe in Lincoln green. That's the one that's on. But the one I did about the gasoline in there was, ain't never been done. Hiding from the screams. That's the one I didn't put in. Hiding from the screams is the clad head of toe in Lincoln. I edited it myself, I remember, and thought that clad head of toe also worked. It might be a little more damn accessible. Yeah. So there's another little point where I took took the damn screams out of that. But you know what? Both of those damn things are true about that song as far as the imagery, the story, the theater, and the fictionality of the of it is, you know.
Yeah, man. I like doing that. I've got a couple of my
Is that songs. A word, fictionality?
If it ain't, it is now.
If it's not, I'm coining it. I'm taking credit.
It's coined.
Coined.
Man, what is that what is that dice game?
My dice game?
Mm-hmm.
Gotcha.
Man, I want to play that sometime today. But I was trying to tell somebody about that game the other day because we were playing a card game that was fairly similar.
Right.
And I was like, this reminds me of a dice game I used to play. And I was like, but I can't even remember how to tell you. I can't even begin.
It's called Cacho. It's from Bolivia.
Yeah.
And I'm the world's greatest player. The winningest in the world. The globe, including Bolivia.
Humble brag.
It's just a fact, baby.
But yeah, back to it though. I've got a couple of my life songs, and I think I picked it up from like you, man. I know with some of the songs on the previous episodes that we had done, you opened up and shared like versions that weren't recorded or, you know, hadn't been done in a while, or I think with one of the main reasons I pull up that particular podcast that we did is Fast Moving Something. You shared a hidden version of it.
That's right. I sure did, didn't I?
And like when I listened to the recorded version, I was like, I like the version I got better.
Yeah. I like that raw stuff from everybody. I mean, not just me.
And I've got a few songs now. When I play live, man, it's like there's a hidden verses. But if I look out and if it looks like the people are like done with the song, you won't get it. But if like you look out there and you'd be like, okay, these people want to, you want a little bit, you want a little bit more of it? Here's some. Give it another verse. I like that, man. That's fun. I think it makes a live show special. You know what I mean?
That is what makes a live show, is the uniqueness of the performances.
Yeah.
And that's why, like, Joe Walsh and people like that, when they get their guitarist, they want them to know the album version, but they don't want them to play it. They want to get around it, but to also give... When you, I hear this in live shows. The instrumentalists are close to what you are hearing on the radio, but they have their stylistic interpretations that are quite different and tasty on site. And I think, like, that makes the live show. I don't want to... I mean, it's fine. You can give it to me exactly like the album and I will enjoy it, but... You know, the moment of the leads will be different. You know, the voicings on the lead instruments will be different in some way. You get the on the spot uniqueness that'll never happen again. You know, That's what I like about live shows. When the unexpected happens is when you really like it, and that it's unexpected for the musicians too, and you know it when they fall off into something cool. You know,
yeah, you see it on their face.
Yeah, and they wait for that. You know, and so do I. For those things.
Yeah. One of my favorite bands, Band of Horses. I've seen them live more than...
I saw them open for the Chili Peppers in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. They're song The Funeral.
Yeah.
They always leave a chance for that to happen toward the end. And there's a couple more of their songs that they leave it that way. It feels like it was written that way. Like there's a special portion of that song, and if everybody falls into place, there's about to be some magic. But I've been to enough of their shows to where maybe they had too much to drink, or like maybe that wasn't the night.
Happens.
Maybe it wasn't the night.
It does happen. Y'all might have noticed I said curse words this time. You know, my last four episodes, that's why I said, y'all got a different guy now. Same guy, different guy, but I was way more reserved. I was protecting my perceived brand. Maybe I was protecting the world from from what I really am, which I don't know what the hell that is. But yeah, so you've heard me say curse words today, and I've been really, I've tried to be kind of freewheeling, and that is an indicator of how different I am in some ways than those last interviews. I was going through, you know, a different time in my life then. Yeah. And talking about any things too personal, just all, it was historical. I was trying to do a good representation of myself and stuff, and I believe I did a pretty decent job of it. But now I'm just kind of stripped off a lot of the illusions of a lot of things that I had built constructs around that are now not the same. And I'm the one that talked to Alan months or two ago and said, you know, because I listened to some of my interviews again, I'm like, that dude, that motherfucker right there, Daniel, what about him? And I said, maybe me needs another interview to, like, maybe that those interviews need to continue and see how I've changed, as we all change. As I, the other humans, I'm no different. I believe other humans, if they had an interview, you know, 2 years ago, it might be, but I've fucking drastically changed, clearly, because I just said the F-bomb like 17 times in this interview.
I mean, I do it too, man. I hear my growth. Yeah. You know, as an interviewer, or just like, hell, as a person.
Yeah.
And you kind of see, like, the way you've kind of developed, so to speak.
If y'all don't know, guess what? Sometimes people hear on interviews and all the other things, in private, they might or might not say the F word. I don't know. They may do all kind of shit you don't hear about on the motherfucking podcast. Yeah. Or the TV. You don't know. I'm not saying they do, but I'm just telling you. Kind of tired of it. I'm just kind of tired of the fucking wall. You know, I said this before. Japanese have a, let's call it a proverb. Be aware of, like, the sevenfold fence. Okay, there are seven fences between the true yourself and the center and the world, and the whole outside world sees the outside of the seventh fence. And you go inside fence by fence to see the true nature of a human, and that last, and you open those doors for people to see the inside of those fences. You and I have some of those doors open. We're opening up some right now. But you never let anybody see the inside. Nobody ever sees the inside of the fence, the last one, or maybe they do. But how many levels do you let people through to see what's really going on inside of you and all of that? So all those last interviews, you guys are right up on the outside of the fences. And they're nice, pretty fences, and there's a lot of things to talk about then. But a lot of my doors are wide open right now, like, for anybody to walk through and me to walk back out of. And I don't know. I know how I got to this point, but maybe other people do too. And so I kind of said we probably need an interview. I didn't anticipate it was going to be a surprise in the middle of the day, but hey, what the hell? Yeah. This is what we're doing now.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we ain't even talked about a lot of things. Musically, I got going on and... Yeah, whatever. I mean, what we can, but we ain't even got to. Before we started this, I wrote a question on a piece of paper that was going to open this whole interview. I was like, hey, I struggled this morning about what the hell I was going to say. I was like, man, we touched on the beginning. I was like, nobody trying to hear no stuff about, you know, too deep a personality thing, you know. And that's when I wrote this question down on the paper. Like, what should I talk about? What? Why? You know, what are we doing here? And,
we're just going to have to find out on the next episode.
How far we've been going? I was about to suggest that we take a break,
yeah,
and come back with a song, or either I don't know. You might want to close this one down right here, and we do whatever. But I don't need a break, but it feels like a moment to segue.
Yeah,
like per our last deal, like we got to about 45 minutes or an hour, and we were like, hey, well, you know,
it's a good time.
See, I've done broke the third wall 16 times already. You know, and I just don't care. I hope that y'all listeners don't care either. I'm going to continue to break them motherfuckers down until I feel comfortable with it.
Right on, dude. Well, we will be asking the question written on paper on the next episode. Thank y'all, everybody. Rate and review the show. Daniel, anything you'd like to plug and tell the people where they can all around hounds, go listen to that.
Hey, that 13 Outside the Wire, talk a bunch about it. 13 Outside the Wire is an album me and David Lauderdale recorded in 2006, Mississippi Chris Sharp produced it in his studio, and we did it in one day. It was open mic, two people, one time, one take kind of deal. And it's 13 songs that represent what we were playing in the stages right then, just two guys, two acoustics. And that's the only thing that I know of that I've got up. It's of me and him. It's called All Around Hounds. There's a track off of the Jimbo Mathis project on there. It's Red Light with Jimbo playing some percussion on it with us. There's also one track off an album David and I did that he produced. And that one is called Break the Fever. It's got David playing keyboard, his father's organ on it. So those two songs and 13 Outside the Wire are really all you can hear. And that was stuff we did 15 years ago. And I love it, those things. I got a lot more. So, yeah, if you want to care about checking out some of that stuff, that's where you get it. Go to where the hell ever and check it out, Spotify or whatever.
Right on. And we're going to talk about that new on the next time. See y'all.
Baseball fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win a prize every day during the baseball season. Step into the batter's box for BetMGM's Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. Pick any area of the strike zone and take your best swing. If you get a single, double, triple, or home run, you'll receive a prize. Smash a home run to collect a bonus bet on us. Just log into your BetMGM sports account to get started. Then visit your promotions section to access the Swing for the Fences free-to-play game. You'll score a prize if you hit a single, double, triple, or home run. There's nothing more exciting than going yard, so swing for the fences with the king of sportsbooks. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards vary depending on the market and expire 24 hours from issuance. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.